The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Well, welcome back. We have reached the second hour. Heather Dennis joined us in hour number one from Indy. Mike Griffith will join us shortly. He's also covering the national championship game. Bob is up next in New York. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Paul. Happy New Year to you and your staff.
Thank you so much.
You know what? You know I'm an Aggie fan. My kids went to school there, but Bear Bryant, he was from there, and he went over to Alabama, and then with Johnny Manziel, Texas A&M, got the tide rolling after that thing, won the title. This time, same scenario this season, Alabama's a machine, and we're seeing greatness in Nick Saban. Everywhere he's been, you know, this is like a John Wooden factor. The guy, put it this way, if for some reason he wanted to leave there and he went to LSU next year, believe me, they'd probably win the title. We're seeing greatness. But, you know, I love the Aggies. It should be a great game, but I really think Alabama is just the cream of the crop because of that coach. And I'd like to hear your comments, Paul. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you very much. And it's a little bit hard to find any fault in what you said. Thank you for the call. Let's continue with Patrick, who is in North Carolina. Hello, Patrick.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Hey, Paul. You know, everybody wants to talk about Ric Flair and this and that. I want to talk about the X's and O's Monday night. You look at the matchup. I want to get your opinion on it. When you look at the matchup, you got offensive and defensive lines that the last time they played, Alabama controlled. You look at Alabama's running game coming off of Cincinnati. I mean, what were they, around 7 yards of rush? I think basically when you look at Monday night, Kirby understands he's going to have to try to take away something. Easier said than done. If he tries to take away the running game Alabama with Robinson, I honestly believe you're going to see another matchup problem for Alabama, for Georgia, I'm sorry.
Right.
Because, in my opinion, Alabama exposes Georgia whenever they stack 8 to 9 at the line of scrimmage. I think that's going to be another scenario Monday night. Kirby knows he's got to slow down the running game, but I want to get your opinion on that. And I'll tell you, I'll take the quarterback at Alabama any day over the quarterback of Georgia as far as being able to make plays. I just think that's going to be a key scenario. Those kids on both sides of the ball, they play in front of 85,000, 90,000 fans every day. But when you look at this game, here we go again. Georgia's coming in favored, but truly, I think those kids have a mindset of, oh, we've never beaten Alabama, here we go again. And I just think they've got a lot of extra pressure on them. Not that Alabama doesn't have pressure. I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, you know, but as far as what non-X's and O's, the pressure part of it, you're right. Alabama doesn't feel pressure. If they ever had pressure, it was in the first game. They couldn't lose that game. I would think they're going to be a little looser this time around. I thought they had a B game against Cincinnati, but that's all they needed to do. And, you know, they survived that, and, of course, Georgia did as well. But it was a little more emotional for Georgia. But ultimately, for all the matchups, what do you need most to win a national championship? And that's an elite quarterback, and only one team has that.
Yep. I agree. And, you know, Georgia's a great team. I'm not taking anything away from them. Kirby's a good coach. But I think if you look at the whole body of work, and I know Alabama had a lot of close games. Everybody wants to kind of harp back at that. But you look at Georgia and the schedule they played this year and the teams they faced, the physicality on both sides of the ball just couldn't hold up against Georgia. And that's why when they play a team like Alabama, Alabama matches up so well with them because they're not going to be able to push those guys around. And I think when they run into that, they're like, oh, shucks. This is something that we don't see every week. And I think that's a big factor in this rivalry, if you want to call it a rivalry.
Well, it is a rivalry. Thank you, Patrick. A very good analysis. Thank you for giving us a ring. Al is up next. Good afternoon. Al, you there? Don't hear Al. Jamie is up next. Good afternoon, Jamie.
Hello, Paul.
Yes, good afternoon. How are you?
This is Jimmy in Alabama. Jimmy.
Wonderful, thank you. Jimmy, go ahead, whatever.
First time caller, long time listener, and I admire your work. Just a comment and a question for you. Kind of responding to one of your callers, I think maybe Tuesday or Wednesday, a Georgia guy, wanting to know if Alabama fans were fair weather fans when they weren't winning championships. Well, I just finished my 61st year as an Alabama fan, and counting them up, I'm averaging about a national championship every 4 or 5 years. So I don't have time to be a fair weather fan, really, to be honest with you. And my question is, as far as the people are asking what happened to the Alabama offensive line after maybe halftime of the Auburn, they had such a rough time with LSU and with Auburn. Well, the way I saw it, we made some rather drastic personnel changes, and it seemed to work. You know, it worked against Auburn in the most half of the third quarter and all the fourth quarter and all the Georgia games. So that's, you know, I'm just wondering what your take is on that, because we did make, you know, some personnel changes as far as center and right guard and right tackle went.
Well, that's what you have to do in a situation like that. And you can tweak the lineup and adjust, and it may not work, but in Alabama's case, it usually does, and there's a reason. They have so much depth. They have so many great players. Paul is up next in New Jersey. Hello, Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. How are you today? Happy New Year to you.
Thank you so much.
You know, number one, I have to say I really enjoyed your commentating at the Alabama game.
Thank you.
Last week. And I saw your clip this morning, earlier this morning on ESPN, and I have to agree with you on all counts there. You know, I had spoken to you about 2 weeks ago, and I shut off my big mouth saying that I thought Georgia was going to win this game, and that was certainly premature. And after watching them against Michigan, you know, I just don't see it. You know, I could be wrong. An awful lot happens in a football game. You know, a fumble here, a fumble there, an incomplete, a drop pass, missed field goal. You know, there's too many factors. But I would have to give Alabama the edge.
Yeah, you know something, Paul? I mean, I wonder, and I'll take myself out of the equation, but, you know, a lot of us are seemingly trying to jump back and forth, and that's understandable because what we saw in Atlanta was fairly chilling. And I mean, I know what I see in, you know, pure talent wise. Yeah, maybe position for position, but the quarterback position is so important. And I don't mean this to be disrespectful to Stetson Bennett. I wish all of us could have accomplished what he has done but he's still no match for, I mean, and I realize the quarterback position is only one part of it, but it is the most important part.
Yeah. It is. And I just want to throw one other thing in, if I may. Do you think Michigan was well prepared for that game? I don't think they were.
It would be hard to answer in the affirmative because they seem clueless.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I just don't think they were prepared for that matchup. You know, I don't think they knew what the hell they were stepping into.
No, they really didn't. Hey, thank you, Paul. Really good to hear from you. Let us continue. We have Mike Griffith coming up in a few minutes. More of your phone calls at 855-242-7285. It's Friday afternoon.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand-name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
We are here in studio today. We'll be in Indianapolis on Monday. And that is where we go right now. We talked to Heather Dinich a minute ago, inside, warm. We're joined now by Mike Griffith, who is outside. Mike, I just checked the temperature at 4 o'clock. It was 20 degrees. I don't know what the wind chill is, but it looks pretty cold out there.
No, it's really not that bad. I was just off for a walk. Thought I'd set up out here, Paul. You know, I mean, this is, hey, man, I grew up in Michigan, right? I'm hardcore. I can handle this. We're here to get a job done. We're focused. You know, let's get this thing rolling. Let's go. I'm ready to go, man.
Okay, well, I'm glad to know. I would not want to be outside, although I'm sure I will be. So, Mike, you've heard it all. I mean, I don't even want to recount everything that's been regurgitated for 3 or 4 weeks. But where are we? Where are you in relation to this game Monday night? What stands out?
You know, it looks a lot like the first time around, only really Georgia should be even more of a favorite. When you think that Mechie's out, I mean, this is a guy that caught over 90 balls, Paul. I mean, I just, you know, the momentum that Georgia has coming off a win over Michigan, everything says Georgia. The one hang-up is this is still the same hang-up that it was the first time that I talked to you about, and that's Nick Saban. And it is what it is. And Kirby, I asked him the question. I said, a lot of people look at this as Nick Saban versus Kirby Smart. I said, do you embrace that or do you downplay that? And he said, it's not about us. He said, it's going to be about the guys that make the plays on the field. And I agree to a large extent, certainly, but these are the coaches that built the programs, that recruited these players, that oversaw the game plan being put in, that developed the players, that choose the personnel. I mean, you can't escape it. It's very much Kirby Smart against Nick Saban. And Kirby's 0-4. And he needs to win this game, and he should win this game, Paul. They've got 12 or 13 NFL draft picks on this Georgia football team, arguably the most talent-rich from an NFL standpoint Georgia team that we've seen.
He should win this game. Now, you say that coming 4 weeks after a game that we all saw. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Why should he win it?
He's got more talent. You know, Georgia's got more experience and more seasoned talent. They have more depth. They have more options. They have more answers. I mean, look, you look in the backfield, Paul, there's four guys that can carry the ball effectively. You look at the receiving core, there's six guys. My goodness, they have two tight ends. They have this incredible freshman, Brock Bowers, and then you've got this 6'7", 285-pound tight end. You've got your seven deep on the line. Your left tackle, you don't even play him. A former five-star can pass block in his sleep. You've got five of your front seven on defense that are going to be drafted in the first two rounds of the NFL draft. At one corner, you have the 2020 number one cornerback in the nation in his second year. At the other, you have an experienced corner, projected first-round pick, that's already won a national championship at Clemson, right? And then you got a junior in Lewisine. He'll be drafted this year. And then you've got a fifth-year senior. I mean, Kirby has all the pieces, and he's even got a practice game. He's even had one go-round at it. He can look at this. He can adjust. So many answers for Georgia. And at the end of the day, they just can't beat themselves. It just looks like when you and I predicted Georgia, I think you were on board last summer. We talked about this. The only difference is we thought JT Daniels would be at quarterback. Well, a funny thing happened on the way to the national championship game. We thought that the clock had struck midnight on Cinderella. in Tuscaloosa last year. But guess what? Stetson Bennett put his foot back into the glass slipper, and he's ready to become a former walk-on four-stringer that takes down Nick Saban. And then you can't make this stuff up. You can't make this storyline up.
No, you can't. But I'm going to go back to something you said a minute ago, Mike. Biggest difference between the first game and the second game is John Mechie. Are you telling me that John Mechie is going to be that big of a factor in round two? The lack of John Mechie?
I'm telling you, yes, because you don't have to account for John Mechie now. Instead of two big-time playmakers, there's one. You really got to circle Jameson Williams, right? And I'm not saying Alabama doesn't have other talented receivers. Of course they do. Somebody else will step up. Somebody else will emerge. But it's not going to be John Mechie. John Mechie and Bryce Young can play catch in their sleep. I mean, he was the third down guy. Bryce Young went to the line. He looked at Mechie. Mechie looked at him. It was almost like an option route every time. They both were on the same wavelength. Depending on what the defense was going to do, they knew how the other would react, and they were basically unstoppable. Now, I still think Bryce Young is amazing. And there's a reason why, by the way, it's Alabama and Georgia. Just for all those other people, and I know that the Jim Harbaugh people all disappeared quickly on you, Paul. But these two teams are far and away the best teams in college football. It's not even close. They're 10,000 feet above everyone else. And that's why they're playing in this game. And that's why I think it's going to be another close game. And I think the team that makes the fewest mistakes, boy, going out on a limb here. But if Georgia doesn't beat themselves, I think Georgia's going to win, Paul. I got to tell you. They have to win. I just can't imagine.
You know, Mike, listen, I admire you for trying to will them to victory. But, you know, would you agree or would you not agree that Kirby Smart is part of this? And, you know, whether he wants to admit it or not, a lot of people are pointing toward him.
Yeah, there's no question about it. You know, Kirby can't go out there and play. What Kirby needs to do is reel it in. Because I think what you saw in the first game was the same mistake that he made last year and the same mistake that he made the year before and the year before. He tried too hard. He tried to do too much, Paul. And I think he realizes now he's got to simplify it. It's paralysis by analysis. This secondary, they're thinking A, B, C, Z. What do we do if this, you know, no, let these guys play, Kirby. And now that Mechie's out of the equation, it makes it that much easier for Georgia to dial it down, get back to doing what they were doing during the regular season. You're not going to fool Nick Saban. You're not going to outcoach Nick Saban. But your players can outplay Nick Saban's players this year because the Tide lost six first-round draft picks, Paul. They lost six guys that went in the first round. They're gone. And Georgia, meanwhile, has the most talented team that they've had arguably in the history of the program this season.
Mike, I'm trying to be nice here. I don't want to sound like a trial lawyer and play semantics and games because this is fun. We're down to the final game, but it seems to me that you're trying to convince yourself that Kirby Smart is going to be different this time. Are you well on your way to convincing yourself? Because a lot of what you're telling me, other than Mechie, you know, was applicable back on December 3rd, and we all know what happened. So is there anything else, or is this your best shot?
Well, I mean, there's a track record of this. You know, I talked with Coach Spurrier yesterday. We saw Florida State beat Florida, and Florida avenged that in the 90s.
Okay.
We saw the LSU-Alabama game, 10 years ago, I suppose, LSU beat Bama in the regular season, and Bama avenged. I think there is an advantage to the team that lost the first time around. But I really do believe that the cream rises to the top. And, again, of course, certainly Alabama can win this game, Paul. It's fluid. It's a game of circumstance. There's bad bounces, calls, whatever. But I think if you play this game 10 times, I'm taking Georgia seven or eight out of those 10 times because of the talent, because of that front seven. There were eight quarterback pressures. And Bill O'Brien said he watched film, and it felt like a lot more than that. I mean, they were that close. They were that close to getting to Bryce Young, Paul. And if they get to Bryce Young, that will change Bryce's world. That will change his perspective. And I think that dog's front seven this time, I think they're going to finish more often. Conversely, I just can't believe that Stetson Bennett is going to throw two more interceptions. I don't see it happening. And if he does, then I think this time Kirby might be willing to make a change if he has to. Last time, I don't think he was going to. But if he needed to, Kirby Smart wants to win the title more than anything. And at the end of the day, Georgia has more talent and they have more options. And the only reason anybody should even think about picking Alabama is Nick Saban. That's the only reason.
Well, not the worst reason in the world, is it?
That's true. No, but I'm just saying you can't rely on a coach.
I mean, Mike, I want to play back what you just said. Yeah, the only reason people may be picking Alabama is Nick Saban. I mean, that's not like saying, hey, the only reason people may be picking a team is because of Joe Moorhead's the coach. I mean, we're talking Nick Saban. He has won a few games in his time.
Oh, he's fantastic, and he's made great substitutions, and he motivates like no one else. We talked about how he flipped at that Auburn game and told his kids to go out there and have fun, and you're thinking, what in the world? You know, cupcakes and Kool-Aid in the locker room. He's a master motivator. He's a master psychologist. He's had Kirby's number, but I think this Georgia team has Kirby's back. I think this leadership group, this group of outgoing seniors, I really believe these players are going to – hey, listen, we watched Philip Fulmer in Tennessee beat a really good Steve Spurrier in 98 because of a guy by the name of Al Wilson. And when you got those sort of catalysts on the field, like a N'Kobe Dean, when you got a guy like N'Kobe Dean or a Jordan Davis, you got guys like that that can put their foot down, I really believe this time that it'll be different. I think you got to think that. You got to think the cream rises to the top, right, Paul?
Yeah. I'm just the host, the lowly talk show host.
You're not sold on this yet?
I want to think about it over the weekend, Mike. I think you've made a compelling argument. So let's do this. Let's move to the final round of this conversation and get we've heard your analysis. We'll get another thought or two from you. And then we do, of course, want you to pick a score in the game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, the final round of analysis is that what we saw last week was not an illusion. You saw complete domination. You know, Jim Harbaugh got beat up so bad, he's telling everybody he might leave, so they'll fall at his feet and tell him how great he is. I mean, what an embarrassing moment for the Big Ten. I just kept asking, is that really the best team in the Big Ten? No wonder they don't want these expanded playoffs. No wonder they're trying to filibuster and cancel seasons up there. I mean, seriously, that was just complete domination. I don't think anybody – I thought Cincinnati put up a much better fight against Alabama than Michigan with all these resources. To me, though, that tells me where college football is at. And you hear the sniping and the complaining that it's this SEC agenda, yada, yada. Look, man, it was right there on the field for you. And Monday night, you're going to see the two best teams in college football. And you know what? Next year, you'll probably see two teams from the SEC play for the national championship again. Because these other conferences, instead of trying to get better, they're sniping and complaining about Greg Sankey, you know, serving on a committee and trying to make college football better instead of looking inward and making themselves better. How about they try that for a change? Instead of worrying about what the SEC is doing to excel and rise above everyone else, why don't they worry about themselves? Why don't they look inward? Maybe invest a little bit more into their coaches, their facilities, their recruiting. Figure out this NIL. What did I see? Texas A&M spent like $30 million. Is that what I'm reading? $30 million in NIL deals? And I was in the media center and Tommy D's Tuscaloosa said, yeah, that might be the fifth most expensive recruiting class they've ever had. I said, where did that come from? He said, oh, Jimbo Fisher with it. I said, oh, geez, here we go. But NIL's changing the world, Paul. You know, this championship here is what it is. But when we look to the future, we're going to be talking about this free agent and that free agent transfer that came in and this NIL deal and so he's negotiating with, you know, Timex to see if they're going to pay him enough to play in it. I mean, the game is changing really fast, Paul.
The question was, what's the score going to be, Mike?
27-24, Georgia.
The spy who came in from the cold. Mike Griffith joining us from Indianapolis. Mike, we will see you up there. Enjoy yourself. You've earned it. Let's take a break.
I look forward to it.
I mean, wow. That was priceless. Mike Griffith picking the Dogs because of all the reasons that he's been laying out.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back. Great to have all of you here. And Larry is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Larry.
Well, hey, Paul. This is a real honor.
Thank you.
For me, I'm a first-time caller. But what I wanted to mention to you was the young man yesterday, was his name Sanford, the 12-year-old boy?
I think so, yes.
Yeah, well, hey, you did such a great job with him. And he sounds like he's a pretty smart kid. So I got a suggestion. Sometime when you want to add something to your show, maybe you might want to just add Sanford once a week.
I think we just ought to do an all kids show one day.
There you go. Well, anyway, he sounded like a smart kid, and I thought you must be a teacher from somewhere because you handled him really good. So.
Well, I've always it sounds crazy considering what I do, but I've always had a desire to teach. So I use the young people on the show as my laboratory since I'm currently without a teaching job.
Well, anyway, Paul, I don't know much about football. The only thing I know about Alabama, and I do pull for Alabama, but that's because Gary Rutledge and Jim Martin worked for me for a while.
Oh, wow.
They had some great stories.
I bet they did.
about Bear Bryant. But anyway... Oh, and listen, I have one last question. I'll let you go. Is Laura Rutledge related to Gary or Jeff?
No. That's a good question.
Okay.
Laura's married to Josh Rutledge, who comes from, where does he come from? Coleman. And he was a baseball player at Alabama, but I don't think they could be distant cousins, but I don't think they're direct.
Well, anyway, they were two wonderful guys to have.
Yeah, no, I got to know all those guys, and my wife knew their mom very well. And they were a great family, and produced some pretty famous Alabama quarterbacks. Well, you take care of yourself. Thank you very much for the call. Let's check in with Ed, who is in Las Vegas. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Paul. How are you?
Quite well, thank you.
Comment about the discussion you had with Lord Dinich a little bit ago. Do I need to turn it down?
Yeah, no,
you hear me?
Yeah, you're great, Ed.
Okay. The discussion you had with Lord Dinich, Heather Dinich earlier, about the college football playoff discussions. I don't know if these people who run college football currently and the conference commissioners and the presidents really understand what they got on their hands right now, that I don't know that college football has been better and more watchable and more entertaining any time in my lifetime. And I'm now 68 years old. I've been watching college football since I was about 5. And, I had reservations when the BCS came into being, but generally I think the teams that played for the title every year were pretty good matchups. When the college football playoff came into being, I had some reservations about that, but I have to admit that each year the four teams picked, I think, are the four teams that probably should be there. And aside from the semifinals this year, the games have all been very, very entertaining. And, but one of the things that concerns me is that I watch a lot of the bowls every year, and about half of the games I watched this year had crowds that were probably not more than half full. If the commissioners think that they're going to be able to sell a largely expanded playoff to the public, I think they ought to pay attention to the details here, because As the crowds go down, it's hard to sell to the viewer the fact that this is an important must-see game and you need to stick around and watch. I think right now the playoff scenario is good, and it makes the regular season very, very compelling, because it's like, I think it's on an ESPN commercial. Every week is the playoffs. And so I would just hope they'd be very careful about how this goes. I think four-team playoff is a good place to be. And I think you just got to not just look at the big picture all the time, but sometimes you really got to concentrate on the details. And the only other comment I have is roll tide.
Hey, thank you, Ed. Great to hear from you. Will is in North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Hi, how are you, Paul?
Quite well. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. I wanted to speak about the NIL for a moment. It sounds like on paper it's such a great deal for these kids, but in reality, between the lawyers and the agents, and all of a sudden the 50% tax brackets that these kids are going to get thrown into, yeah, they're not going to end up making near as much money as what it certainly sounds like when they sign a $1 million deal. And as I understand it, these deals aren't for 4 years. It's way more for the, you know, it's 1 year, a kid blows his knee out, or he's just out of luck then. And I would lean way more towards the insurance policies, you know, things of those natures flowing through the schools, as opposed to the Wild West that seems to have come about. And I just wanted to get your opinion on that.
Yeah, I think we're still in the somewhat embryonic stage of all this. I think it's important, but I'm really interested in talking to Jimbo Fisher about it, because he'll be with us in a few minutes and we'll get some more context on that. We're heading to a break. More of your phone calls right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Ken is up next in Florida. Good afternoon, Ken.
Good afternoon.
Hey there.
Hey, I'm a first-time caller from Florida.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I've been very interesting. I enjoy your program. I like the dialogue you have.
Well, thank you very much, Ken.
What I was calling about, I played football. I'm 79 years old, and I played football at Troy as a running back in 1963.
Yes.
You know, one of the things is you never can depend on what will happen. Like, you know what a snafu is?
Yes, I've heard that word.
Okay.
My life
I served in the infantry in Vietnam, so I have seen some unusual situations. For example, I was a backup quarterback in high school, and on the first play of scrimmage, our first-string quarterback got injured. No one's going on the fact that you can have a drop kick, you can have even the punter miss the ball, and you can have the receivers bounce the ball off their hands. Anything will not necessarily work perfectly. Everyone seems to be talking like everything's going to go smoothly and there'll be no snafus. The right snafu, like that guy dropped the ball for Bama the last time, in the right circumstances, if you have snafus, it will change the game greatly. If you lose your quarterback, you're really in deep trouble. So I just thought, but I do think Saban probably is the most stable person for dealing in stress and stressful situations. And that's why I think Alabama will win, even though I went to Troy.
Well, I appreciate your call very, very much, and thank you for your service. Spencer is in Houston. Hello, Spencer.
Hey, Paul. How are you doing today?
Very well. Thank you for calling.
Absolutely. This is my second time calling. I called after UT and Oklahoma moved. I went to A&M. I just graduated in August. So whenever that happened, I went into kind of a panic, you know. But the reason I'm calling today is about this national championship, which I, you know, from like a winning perspective, I don't really care who wins, but I'm very interested to see it. I for some reason in my head, cannot see Georgia winning. I don't really know why. I just can't imagine it. I've got family that went to UGA, so I like them enough, but the SEC West representation too. Could go either way, and I don't really care. But the real reason I'm calling is yesterday, whenever Red Dog called, hilarious, by the way. Some of the jeering that they're throwing at, you know, the Alabama fans, I think is a little unfair. And like I said, I went to A&M. I'm not unfamiliar with really, you know, angry fan bases. Our entire fight song, I don't know if you know it, but our fight song is about committing arson against UT. It's, you know, just kind of funny. But whenever Red Dog, you know, called the Alabama fans, you know, a bunch of, you know, hillbilly rednecks or whatever he said, and that, you know, all that stuff, and then, you know, proceeded to, you know, make fun of their accent, which to me, hearing a guy from Georgia make fun of an Alabama accent kind of blows my mind. And I just don't understand it, Paul.
I agree. It's always humorous. Red Dog is a moron. Let's just leave it at that. How about Meal, who is calling from London? Are you in London?
I am. Well, just outside of London.
Outside
Paul.
Of
you
London.
Doing?
Yeah. Well,
I'm in Oxford. Yeah.
10 o'clock at night over there, or something like that.
It's 10 till 10. You got it right.
Yeah.
So I'm the president of the UGA Alumni Association over here, and on Monday night it'll be a 1 a.m. kickoff for us, but we're going to be up for it, and we're going to.
Wow! So tell us, how will that work? I mean, I know it's late, but so where will you guys gather?
Well, unfortunately, we won't gather for this. We have a place we gather as a sports bar in London. We watch all of the games that are noon Eastern or 3:30, but
right.
This kind of game. There's 15 of us that are active. We might pull a crowd of about 20, and that's not enough income for any bar to stay open from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. So
not even in a town that likes to drink.
you would think, I know, but I think COVID has something to do with that.
Yeah,
as
soon as I asked that, I thought London's a pretty tough place to be right now.
We've got a few intimate friends who will be over here watching it, though. Don't worry about that. There'll be a little small crowd. So... I just wanted to just comment on the game if I could, Paul, if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, sure.
Although
I'm far flung,
I'm a Georgia graduate, class of '89, and I follow it closely. And it's a really interesting show. I like how you guys have a lot of interesting different views and callers. And I will say this: so number one, the whole kind of Kirby Nick Saban thing, it's partially true, but that SEC championship game. In my opinion, both teams have enough talent to beat the other. You know, no question about that. So, therefore, to me, it comes down to coaching. Is it Nick and Kirby? To an extent, yes. To an extent, no. I think in that game, I think Bill O'Brien did more than Nick Saban to win that ball game. If I'm honest, they out-teamed Georgia, and hats off to them. They did a really good job with that. But what is funny is I think Nick's more of a CEO. Kirby, in my opinion, if you watch him, he coaches the Georgia defense. I know Dan Lanning's a great coach. Mel Tucker was a great coach and so on. But Kirby's very animated and very into the play-by-play when the defense is on the field. When the offense is on the field, he's more of a spectator. So I think that's very much how it goes. But even in a coaching world, it's hard to beat a team twice when you've got that much talent on the field. So I kind of like the things that Mike Griffiths was saying, maybe partly because I'm a homer, but in my opinion, I think Georgia's going to win the ball game. That's not a Muhammad Ali call, so we could very easily not win the ball game. I mean, you know, Alabama could do it, but I have this feeling that this time that Georgia coaching staff will do just enough to win the game. That's my view.
Well, Neil, thank you. How long have you been in the UK?
Well, my wife's British, and when I graduated from Georgia in 1989, I came over here. So okay. I've been here ever since. A couple of stints in Atlanta as an expat, quote unquote.
No, I love it. I've been to London once or twice. My grandfather is from London, so I am partial. And I'm thinking about coming over there and doing a show on soccer. I think it would be very popular. Can you imagine this audience talking soccer? just a thought that I've already reconsidered. We are heading to the second half of the show. Jimbo Fisher will join us shortly. We're still recovering from Mike Griffith. We hope you'll stick around.